roundtable, 5:45 on a Friday night for my guest tonight. Firstly, a lady who was with Jefferson Airplane, Jefferson Starship, and is now just there by herself, which comes, of course, Grace Slick. Welcome.
Thank you.
And also Paul Gambaccini.
Thank you.
And I feel a little, not yet, I feel a little bit like an outsider being any non-American on the program, but nevertheless, I'll struggle through that. And we'll be commenting on the new releases between now and 7:30. Firstly, a new single from Philip Lynott, as he's now going this time, produced by Kit Wolven and Phil Lynott, Yellow Pearl. The new single from Philip Lynott, that's Yellow Pearl. We've already had a Black Pearl in the charts a few years ago. Could there be a Yellow Pearl in the charts? And what did it all mean? And did you like it, Paul Gambaccini?
Well, I think it could well chart. I'm very amused, actually, because the important fact is that this is co-written and remixed by Midjure. That's why this is a single at this time. I don't know if Grace is aware of Vienna by Ultravox, a song which Mid sings brilliantly vocal on, and also, of course, he's sort of one of the main guiding spirits behind Ultravox at the moment. And that's why this single has come out at this time. His influence is all over the record. I just find this very amusing that that's what they've done at this time. As far as the actual song, I don't think it's much of a song, but with the things which Midge has obviously put into it, it's pretty good. And Phil's vocal is very distinctive. I think it'll make the chart. I don't think it's a monster, though.
Hmm. Maybe we would point out to Grace that Phil Lynott is the lead singer of a group called Thin Lizzy, have had many hits over here since 73, from 73 onwards. This is ostensibly a solo single. And Midjure, who co-wrote it with him, is the lead singer with a group who's been at number two for the last 4 weeks.
Do you feel like we're conducting a class?
Well, that's good. I like to know that stuff.
Right. What did you think of it on first hearing?
In that vein, I prefer Peter Gabriel. The production of Peter Gabriel's album, the sound, that rhythm Peter Gabriel used, and it was produced better. I couldn't understand a lot of lyrics. They're going to get us, they're going to get us who. I didn't hear that. It may be good. I don't know. I also sort of like it better when people sing originally. Rather, I've heard a number of singers who sound that way. And I like to hear sort of a unique way of phrasing.
I don't think it's always easy for someone to get a unique sound, obviously. I mean, Phil Lynott, strangely enough, generally has a very unique voice. His voice is very different and almost usually instantly recognizable, right, Paul?
That is correct.
But this time, he sounds more in the vein of a lot of current bands. But nevertheless, I like that. I think it's good. I think it's going to go. Phil Lynott and Yellow Pearl, written by Midjure and Phil Lynott. The next track we all know and we're all going to love, I'm sure, Aretha Franklin and a new version of Otis Redding's I Can't Send You This. Tom Jones and Edgar Winter and people like that. Also a mid-60s club favourite. That's a new version by Aretha Franklin, and I'm sure we're all maybe going to say, he said, putting words into everyone's mouth, wow, Aretha Franklin, wow, I Can't Turn You Loose. But would a 16-and-a-half-year-old record buyer go out and buy something like that? Who knows? Grace Slick, do you know?
No, I don't. It's hard to not like... Aretha Franklin's an amazing singer. I'd love to listen to her. She probably sings, like, you know, Christmas carols and stuff, anything. I like anything, so I'm a little bit partial. But it depends upon... I don't know if people are used to hearing that or if it's fatty or something over here. You know, like, I want to hear new wave, I want to hear punk, or I want to hear country, or I want to hear R&B. It's hard to say. I don't know what's happening over here.
Well, there are a lot of different things happening, and there are more splinter groups and minority groups following particular styles of music, and even styles within styles, as in maybe rockabilly music. There are still divisions within one type of music.
Yeah, well, she probably is. Call her the Queen of Soul, and I would say that she probably still holds that title, apart from the gal and Staple Singers. It's real good, too. But if they do listen to that kind of music, that's the best lady you can get, probably.
Would that be a hit in the States?
No, because they're not playing R&B. They're playing country western music, crossover ballads, and an occasional rock song. Very structured.
Who decides that they don't play R&B?
The music directors decide what everybody hears. The music directors have charge of like 40 stations. There are maybe 10, 20 music directors. They tell the program director what to play. The program director tells the DJ what to play. So it's basically a sort of a Nazi operation.
Do you get to meet the people on the street enough to know what they would like? And if so, would they like anything different?
Well, they don't know what they would like because they can't buy all the records to make those decisions. They don't have that kind of money. So they buy what they like of what they hear. But basically what they're hearing is, like I say, either country western or soft rock or crossover rock, or if it's the Rolling Stones, they'll play it because they know that sells. Rolling Stones, Eagles, you know, Beatles, something like that, they will play those. But apart from that, they don't hear new groups. They don't hear anybody from Britain except The Who and The Rolling Stones, and they don't hear anything in any other language beside English.
Do you think there's a danger of that general approach creeping in socially as well as musically?
Well, I don't like it at all, because I feel out of it. I would love to hear the British groups that are coming up. I also like the Rolling Stones, but I don't know what's happening. Right. I don't even know what's happening in my own country, because I can't afford to buy that many records to find out.
Yeah, no, but I'm saying, do you think that socially those ideals and that sort of pattern could move into other areas other than music in the States?
Probably, yes. Governor.
You wish.
President Reagan, for instance, is another joke. But we could talk about that level of stuff forever.
Okay, we'll move over instead to
keep
a man who used to be on radio stations in America. In fact, he used to run a radio station in America, Paul Gambaccini.
Yes, and I must say my policy was far more permissive and open to various kinds of music than are going on at the current moment. And the type of thing which Grace has been describing actually is reflected in the top 30 in the States. Not that the songs are bad. A couple of them, as a matter of fact, are gems, which don't make it here. But there does seem to be an exclusion of black material on AM radio at the moment and certain other things, as Grace is describing. And so to compensate for that, we're actually going to slightly alter the format of our Saturday show on Radio 1 to allow for more of this type of material at the expense of a couple of the blander items in the top 30. More will be revealed on future Saturdays.
Do you feel...
Unfortunately...
No, I was going to say, do you feel, doing the American charts, that general feeling, say from British letters that you have to the program, that the feeling towards the American charts has changed gradually over, say, the last year, couple of years, 3 years?
It's only actually changed amongst the kids who are really into the current groups here, either the Futurists or the ska kids of a couple of years ago, or the New Waivers, who were saying, "Hey, wait a minute, why did we never hear the Sex Pistols in the American Top 30? Why did we never hear Two Tone in the Top 30?" I mean, there are some of those. But there are some people who prefer the American charts and say, "Hey, why didn't Delbert McClinton make it over here? Why isn't Randy Meisner's record getting played over here?" These are people who love those records in the top 30. I'm not going to stop playing those. But there are some blander things. Now, unfortunately, we've completely ignored "I Can't Turn You Loose" by Aretha Franklin.
But you're just about to comment on it.
Yes, and I'm afraid to say that I don't like it. It's one of my favorite Otis tunes. Aretha is my favorite soul singer ever. But I think that this particular version is somehow a bit too confined. I don't know why it is. Perhaps Aretha Mardine producing it had something to do with it. I think the best tracks on Aretha's album are the ones that Chuck Jackson produced. And I know DLT is crazy about this version as well, as are you. And maybe that's why they've released it as a single here. Because in the States they haven't, although she did perform it on the Grammys last week. And I would rather hear United Together, which was number 3 record.
Well, unfortunately we're not going to hear that because it's a new release program.
But it is on the other side. And so for there it is a new release. Turn it over, now!
Right, that's one thumbs up, one thumbs down, and one thumb sideways for Aretha Franklin, a new single, Otis Redding's "I Can't Turn You Loose." Now a record from Modern Eon. This is Euthenic. That's Modern Eon and a re-recorded track that's been around for several months, actually. Not in that version, but the old version has been. That's a new version, he said, explaining all. It's on Din Disc. It's called Euthenics. And Paul Gambaccini and myself were just reveling in the fact that Dr. Alan Marion Davis wasn't here to tell us, well, Euthenics are, because we're all trying to guess. And Grace came nearest with euthanasia, but we still don't really know.
I know. I feel terribly anti-intellectual about that. I should know it.
Never mind. We've owned up. We've been honest. My guests on the round table, Grace Slick and Paul Gambaccini. First to Grace for that. Was that a bit weird to you?
I thought it was interesting. They had so much effect on the voice that I couldn't understand one word he said. But it made him sound like another instrument. So I like that as an instrumental. But I write lyrics, so I'm real interested in what is being said and if it goes kind of with the music or if the attitude is the same in the band as it is with the lyricist and so forth and all that kind of junk. So basically I like it as an instrumental, but I haven't got the vaguest idea what he's talking about.
There are a lot of the futurist music at the moment. It's very depends a lot on the mood. They have this little...
You gotta tell Grace what futurist means.
I really can't describe it.
There's someone just hearing that expression for the first time, you might think, what is this, the works of Nostradamus or something?
I would say that record would sum it up. It's the vocals in the background quite heavily echoed, quite an accentuated drum beat, maybe a bit of organ, the ethereal riff here and there, and occasionally a Jim Morrison-style vocal. Would you say that summed it up?
I would say a doomy vocal, taking the doomy quality
the
from
doomy
Jim Morrison.
The doomy part of Jim Morrison.
Yes, and also there is a closed aspect to this, which cannot be conveyed on record.
Well, I was mainly talking about the musical aspect here.
Yes, but one must include that. And there's more of a synthesizer, a keyboard synthesizer sound than has been incorporated in 70s music.
Well, Grace digests that.
Okay.
Well, what do you think about the record?
I didn't like it that much, I have to admit it. I was thinking while it was on, I don't dare slag Modern Eon.
Why?
Because in this country, groups are exposed from square one. Because John Peel's program gives exposure to records that are just literally made in back rooms and garages and everything, and because so many of the radio programs on Radio 1 do that, such as even yours in the morning now, you're beginning to do that. And also, of course, the pop press will give coverage to people who have never been in the charts. And this is in direct contrast to what we were talking about last record, the situation in the States. Whereas people like Modern Eon couldn't get any attention whatsoever in the States. Over here, you hear about them all the time. And groups grow, in other words. I don't want to stifle these people at birth.
But, I mean, do you prefer America at the moment, obviously, a very closed-door situation. And Great Britain more of an open door situation than it ever has been. Would you like to see more of a balance?
Well, yeah, but hang on. But there are reasons which are related to the system. This radio station we're speaking on now is a government run station. If the ratings go down in the next 3 minutes because we're about to play a song by a group which has never had a top 10 hit, we don't have to worry. Whereas in the States, the program directors would absolutely panic. They'd rather...
If it was run by the government, we'd be hearing Rory Rogers, you know what I mean?
That's right.
There was a great story in the paper the other day of Ronald Reagan going around canvassing, and he came across this very old man, and he said, "Hello, old man." And he said, "Hello, who are you?" He said, "You don't know me?" And he said, "Well, give me a clue." And he said, "My initials are RR." And the old man looked up at him and said, "Hey, you're Rory Rogers." And that's day 11.
Exactly.
Actually, you missed out the fact that he said, "My initials are RR and I'm running for president." And the man said to his wife, "Hey, look, Roy Rogers is running for president." Anyway.
I didn't read that bit. They didn't have that bit in
my thought of it watching Teardrop Explode on Top of the Pops last night, with you doing Top of the Pops. And there was Teardrop Explode. And I thought, here's the kind of group, square one. They get airplay on Radio 1. They get a lot of coverage in the pop press. Then they make a record which gets minor chart placing. Then they start to hit the 40. They're still not grown. I mean, they're not fully matured yet. I hope not, anyway.
But in a way, they're almost grown.
Was Teardrop Explode the red girl with the red
Toya.
Hat on?
Or? No, that was Toya. I mean, okay. No, that's quite all right. There's no way you could know it. So.
Yeah,
Modern Eon, there's no way we can know either.
Listen, I'm going to carry on and play another record. I think while you two carry on talking about eugenics and Modern Eon and people with red faces and things like that. This is Bell Well Well, their new single, W-O-R-K-N-O, no, no. And we'll have Mass next. That's Bow Wow Wow, W-O-R-K-N-O, no, no. Written by the man who sat in Paul Gambaccini's chair only last week, Martin McLaren.
Yeah!
The man
I'm standing up now.
He's gone for the spare chair. The man who told Adam Ant he wouldn't make it. And the man who has now four singles in the chart.
Martin McLaren, not myself.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's absolutely...
I haven't asked you yet.
Oh.
They had C-30, C-60, C-90 go in the chart. Oh, wait for it. They've also had the only cassette ever to chart, which is quite intriguing. That was Bell Wow Wow, W-R-K-N-O, no, no. Paul Gambaccini, go, go.
Thank you, my hand was raised, teacher. Well, I've got to say, it was absolutely hysterical that the Ants should have left Adam for what they thought was a better deal to form Bow Wow Wow with Malcolm McLaren, and Adam immediately had 8 million hits, and the first one was called Dog Eat Dog. Now, that isn't the funniest thing I've ever heard in pop music. What is? And, the thing is, I can't get excited about this Bow Wow Wow. I actually think it may not work.
I'm not really excited then.
I know, but I think it would be very funny if Malcolm McLaren's new thing did not work. I mean, the first thing was fantastic, C-30, C-60, C-90 Go. It was a brilliant record. And the second one wasn't too good. And it's funny, you know, this one has a lot of good ideas in it, but it just doesn't get there. I mean, Chris Hughes does a better job producing the Ants. I think I can't get excited also because I know that they are as contrived as any Larry Parnes group in the late 50s or as the Bay City Rollers in the early 70s, and I think it would be very funny if this group didn't work.
You just made a lot of enemies. I just sit back and relax to get on excited.
Oh, I know, but I had to get it off my chest.
Yeah, it's quite unpleased as well. I had to get that tie off your chest as well. You just have a look at it. Have you seen a tie like that? It's got little men galloping over it in horses. Very attractive. Right. Grace Lick, what did you think of that?
I don't sound like a cross between a commercial and somebody trying to tune his drums because they're about ready to record. You know, the guys go around their drums like that when they're trying to tune them before you record. And that style of singing. Blondie just did a record called Rapture and that hit form of phrasing. But it was a little too cute for me. Although, are they trying to be funny or what's the deal?
No, I don't think they're trying to be funny. I think
they're trying to cash in on things that affect youth at the moment. I mean, they're trying to sell single records. And we got a lot of unemployment, so what Malcolm McLaren, who wrote the song, has decided to do is say, let's cash in on kids' resentment of the unemployment situation by making a record that says work no, school is not the golden rule. Hey, great.
Why can't we get some of these round table people all on the same week? That's what I ask myself. They
because
all
you'd have
talk
to
buy
about boxing gloves.
The lyrics are stupid. I don't think kids are that stupid to go work N-O-T-E-C-A. I mean, isn't that a little cute?
Over here at the moment, Malcolm McLaren last week was talking a lot about cassettes, and there'll be more and more single cassettes. Do you think those would be really big in the States, singles coming out in cassette form only, or are they already? I don't know.
I would rather like that for I was thinking about saying that to Starship is start going into the studio and making one record and handing it to AM instead of always making albums. I would think there'd be some kind of turnover instead of always buying these things because they're expensive. And because basically what people get sucked into is liking a single and having to pay $8 for it and not liking the rest of the thing. So I rather like the idea of putting out maybe five singles a year as opposed to an album. I also like
albums. What about on cassette?
Or cassette, yeah.
I mean, are they sort of walkabout cassettes very big in the States? I assume they are, as they're catching on over here, the little cassettes that you can stick in your pocket or something and wear the headphones while you're roller skating.
Yeah, that's a racial joke that we have, and the black people say we were not born equal, otherwise white people would have had transistors with their ears, same way we did. But we're not equal, they're beneath us, because they didn't get the transistors on the ears. So, yeah, we do have, and I like that, walking around with Sony Walkman is what the thing is called, and I would prefer that. But there's still somewhat of an argument about, yeah, but they like the package and to look at the people who are playing and the little things and you open it up and look at this stuff. And I could go for not looking at the front of a record. I'd rather have cassettes myself, but then that's...
Okay, we'll talk a bit about Jefferson Starship, Jefferson Airplane, in a while because there are a lot of people who have been following you for years and maybe it's the first chance they've had of hearing you talk about
it. We had to lock the doors, as a matter of fact, for the program.
Did we?
Following around.
Am I locked in here with you two? Heaven help me. 6:15, roundtable with Grace Flick and Paul Gambaccini. And next, it's an American number one. I know you're going to love this one, Paul. Eddie Rabbit and I Love a Rainy Night. Is it still number one in the States, Paul?
No. 9 to 5.
Nope, 9 to 5 was. This is now.
Is it really?
Yes.
Oh, I've been
sorry,
away
I've
for 4 days.
Sorry, I've just blown the gaff for tomorrow. Well,
it's
anyway.
It's been out here for a month, but nevertheless we're playing it because it hasn't had very much airplay. It's so big in the States, and I think just... probably a typically good example of something that's selling like wildfire in the States and doing nothing ever here. You've heard this a lot, obviously, in America.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like it?
I think, yeah, Eddie Rabbit knows how to write AM hit singles. And there, it is not a formula. I don't know what it is. It beats me. I've never had a hit single in my life.
You have.
No. Over a period of time, White Rabbit got to be popular because it represented a cultural thing, but it was
never been
it.
No,
it was
right.
Not really.
Top 10 single. He reached the top 10 in America.
Not here.
Not here, mm-hmm. But it did.
I mean,
did.
It's not one of those things, you know, like, I don't know. Anyhow, this guy, let's talk about him. He knows how to write those songs, whatever they are. I would not buy the record, but I don't mind it, you know what I mean? It's like I don't mind elevator music either.
That's right. If this was playing in the elevator, I wouldn't get out. But on the other hand, I wouldn't go buy it.
I wouldn't
it.
Stay on for more than about 4 floors either.
That's right. Well, in the 60s, I mean, this kind of record, say, Time Won't Let Me by The Outsiders or something, a nice pop record, innocuous pop record, would have gotten up to about 7 or 6. Now this goes to number 1. That shows you the way things are going at the moment.
A lot of people would say this was innocuous pop. They'd say it was sort of country pop. Yeah.
Well, yes, it's the country crossover thing. But this record is actually about as country as Tony Blackburn. I mean, really, he's devoid of a lot of the country influences. And I mean, let's face it, he's from New York City. I mean, so he's not really your
Eddie Rabbit,
classic
Tony Blackburn, of course.
Yes, right. So, in other words, country music now has incorporated an urban element, which it wouldn't have had 20 years ago. And Eddie Rabbit is considered a country artist. I mean, that 9 to 5 by Dolly Parton could be a country music smash as well.
Surely one of the worst things, I suppose, about maybe here and in the States at the moment, with the sort of tunnel vision thing of this is our music and that's their music, a lot of people must be writing to a formula, maybe more so than ever before.
Well, not ever
the
before.
The Americans must be writing.
Things go in cycles.
Must be writing for the American charts, and British writers must be writing for the British charts.
Well, some people are. I mean, good old Even Stevens, who was one of the co-writers here, I mean, he had a monster hit with When You're in Love with a Beautiful Woman. Now, there's an interesting example, because that was a number one over here, Dr. Hook.
Yeah, I don't think you have to sell out to write hits for the American charts. I think I would do it if I knew how, because if you make albums, which are still, that's the way the records go, you're making albums, you can write a song, say, okay, now, in order to be able to make another record, and the amount of time we want, the producer we want, and so forth, let's write this one. This is a hit piece of slop for the AM charts that'll go up to number 6, and then the other 9 songs on the album are what we want to do and what are good. And you could conceivably keep making records that way without selling out, because you've got 9 that are what you really want to do and what you think is good, and 1 piece of junk for the charts. I don't even know how to do. I wish I could do that. I'd love to be able to do that.
I think
that.
It's a talent in itself, writing a piece of music for the chart, even though we might say you're tailoring it for the chart. It is an art.
So let's hear the REO Speedwagon new one later on, because that's just come out here, and that's in the top 5.
You only said that so we had to play it, which we will do a bit later.
Thank you.
And maybe after the next record we can talk a bit about Jefferson Airplane, things like that. A track coming up next, which has been a hit 3 times for US Bonds in 60, Burn Elliott and the Fenmen in 64, and Harley Quinn in 1972. Gillan has done it this time hard on the heels of the last single, which came straight in the charts, I think, in the 40, and then started diving down for some reason. This is New Orleans. That's New Orleans. Will it be a hit for the 4th time? That's on Virgin. And Grace, while you were singing White Rabbit and Somebody to Love with Jefferson Airplane, Gillan was in a group called Episode 6 over here, singing Beatles songs like Here, There and Everywhere. That particular track, first of all, did you like that version?
I noticed last night I was watching a Top of the Pops, and a great number of the top 10 songs were reworkings of old stuff. Is there a nostalgic craze or something going on, or is it a lack of originality?
Lack of good songs, I think.
I mean, people can't figure out. Yeah, I really sort of would prefer not to. Like the Aretha Franklin thing, I like listening to her sing it, but I preferred the original version. And this one is a bit frantic. The lyric and the way it first came out, down in New Orleans. New Orleans is not that frantic, folks. That sounded like New York City or Tokyo traffic or something, you know. It's good, but I think if you're singing about something, you ought to think about what it is you're singing about. So I'm not. I like the attitude that they had and that fastness. If they had been singing about rush hour traffic or a nervous person or something like that.
It was too uptight for New Orleans.
Yeah, I don't think that had any much to do with the original intent of the song.
Very briefly, and we'll talk more about this later, what were the good things about the Jefferson Airplane days of the mid-late 60s that you really liked, that you remember with fondness?
Probably an acceptance of a variety of personalities and stuff getting along together. In other words, the difference between there'd be 300 people at a dance and they would all be dressed and have different attitudes, and nobody was particularly annoyed with anybody. It wasn't like you got the wrong stuff on, or you're listening to the wrong music, or you have the wrong philosophy or anything. Everybody just more or less accepted everybody's difference.
It was a shame that was so short-lived, that feeling, isn't it?
That particular area of it, yeah, it is too bad. But I like change, so the new stuff is good too. I like to watch that dispersion, see how that'll work. Everybody being focused in different directions, see if they'll come around to it or explode their brains out or whatever they'll do with it. I don't know.
Okay, well, we'll talk more later about what you did after that. Paul, Gillan, New Orleans, briefly.
Well, I loved Gary U.S. Bonds. As a matter of fact, a mint copy of his greatest hits on LeGrand is one of my firmest and finest collectibles, and actually, I didn't mind this at all. I thought I was really going to hate it because I'm not a great heavy metal freak, but I think, barring Grace's criticism, taking it away from New Orleans actually itself, it wasn't too bad. I mean, Bruce Springsteen is the best when it comes to doing some Gary U.S. Bonds material. He does a great version of Quarter to Three in the No Nukes film, but this was actually not that bad. That was okay.
Yeah, I liked it too. Gillan, the new single on Virgin, New Orleans, could well be a hit for the 4th time. Up to news we go with The Meteors. It's an EP, and from it, Voodoo Rhythm. Because first we got the news, and we'll comment on the track afterwards. At 6:30, here's Ian Parkinson. I'd rather walk, it's more fun. Thank you, Ian. Right, just after 6:30, it's Round Table with Grace Slick, Paul Gambaccini and myself. Before the news, the Meteors and Voodoo Rhythm, Bitter Rockabilly. Paul.
Well. Okay, I mean, actually that they captured some of the instrumental feeling nicely. I thought of Hank Mazzell's classic jungle rock. I'm glad to see that people in this country are tuning into some of the old forms of music, but I don't think it's a great example of it. It would be wonderful at a party or a dance, which is what it probably is for, but as something that you hear cold on the radio when you're in a different mood, not great.
Could you see yourself doing the Voodoo Rhythm at a party?
No, I enjoy sticking pins into people.
So I noticed. Grace Slick.
I sort of agree with you there. I thought it was semi-competent rockabilly, but didn't rip my brains out or anything.
Thankfully.
Yes, we're very pleased about that.
No, I'd rather like having my brain sort of tugged around by music. That didn't quite do it.
Well, let's hope we find something to pull your brains out a little later. It's 27 minutes to 7 on Roundtable, and there's a new version of 96 Tears by Garland Jeffries. Table 96 Tears Choir here, which you obviously didn't hear. A man who's heard several albums, had about three or four albums over the last three or four years, in fact. And also had a track on the Times Square album called Innocent, Not Guilty. But that was Garland Jeffries doing his Question Mark and the Mysterians very, very well. Very like the original, but also good, I thought, Grace, didn't you?
Yeah, I like that. I like that kind of silly voice thing that he does. Because it amuses me. I like the business of singing a song that's basically, the lyrics are silly, but he knows it, and he's doing it anyway, and doing good. I like that a lot.
I did. I thought it was great, Paul.
Well, I frankly prefer records that he had out in the early 70s called Wild in the Streets, which is a fantastic underground classic. If you can ever get a copy of it, it came out briefly as a single on the A&M label in this country. Fabulous. Wild in the Streets. And then he's just had a gold record in Europe called The Matador. And that was a very big hit on the continent, but not here.
He also had an album here, which would suit you two, called American Boy and Girl.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, which I don't know if it'll suit me or not, but Garland Jeffries met the mother of an old flatmate of mine on a beach in Spain, and she told him about me, and ever since, I've been getting postcards from Garland Jeffries and messages from people saying, Garland Jeffries wants to meet you. Garland Jeffries is coming to England. Garland Jeffries is in town, and I'm expecting him to walk into the studio at any day now, and I don't know why. The people from the record company
Garland,
ran up
and
said...
Garland, can you close the door behind you, please?
He's here. If I ever meet Garland Jeffries, I'll tell him he had a great song in Wild on the Streets. Frankly, I didn't see the point of redoing Question Mark and the Mysterians, because when you have a real chintzy, tacky classic like 96 Tears was, you can't really touch it because it was off in outer space. It was a one-off. Interestingly enough, that was called punk in the 60s. I mean, Question Mark was called a punk singer because he was a punk by the American definition of the word. And, golly, who knows where he is. Well, at least Garland Jeffries has had more records than him.
With a name like Garland, he should have been around during the Flower Power era, shouldn't he? Right, on we go. That was Garland Jeffries, his version of Question Mark and the Mysterians, 96 Tears, 22 minutes to 7, on Round Table with Grace Slick, Paul Gambaccini and myself. This is 21 Guns, and talk about egotistical songs in the Bo Diddley vein, singing about yourself. The track's called 21 Guns. Guns, the first salute of the night. And 21 Guns, that's on Shack, produced by Neville Staples of the Specials. Paul, were you excited by that? You didn't move much.
No, I'm deep in thought, trying to think where I've heard that exciting guitar riff before. It seems like it's come from another single, that boom, doom, doo, 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 doom, doom, doo, doo, doo.
I was going to say that, too. It sounds like a whole mess of other stuff.
Yeah, I can't remember where.
A jumble of other things.
Yeah. I thought the record sort of opened up when that happened, though. It made it more interesting. Unfortunately, I mean, it was nice record. Nice record. Again, we couldn't really hear the lyrics. I mean, I don't want to pinch everything that Grace is going to say. But I thought while we were listening to that, here's a classic example of the difference between British and American production. Because it's very thin, isn't it, really? Somehow.
Yeah, it is.
Even though there's almost more going on at one moment than there was in the Eddie Rabbit record. And the Eddie Rabbit record, it was right up front, and it sounded fuller and richer. Maybe that's because the American records are made for the radio, and I don't think that records really in Britain are produced for the radio.
Well, sometimes you have stuff that's produced for a reason, like disco music produced for dancing or something, but if you're going to have a singer, I can see having affected voices occasionally for a reason, you know, that something's going on in the music. But basically, why have a singer if you can... Why have words? In other words, you could just imitate a guitar riff.
I think it's part of the
feel.
But
why have words
if you can't hear them?
See, I think we're at a disadvantage here. I mean, I think actually, poor old 21 Guns by 21 Guns is at a disadvantage. Because here we are, two white Americans, who are talking about a record which is really outside of our culture. And no matter how many years I've been over here, this type of music is still outside of my culture. Because the black music of my culture is rhythm and blues, is Aretha Franklin, is Otis Redding. Or recently, people like the Gap Band, Yarborough and Peebles, Lakeside, and whatever. But no matter how much I like reggae or ska, I only like individual tracks, and I never can get into it deeply enough. And I think that sometime on Roundtable, there should be someone who really is into those fields.
Yeah, but we didn't...
I think there are people who are into those fields, very definitely, and there are people who've been on here who aren't into the fields that you're into, but unfortunately, because of time and the number of chairs the BBC can afford, we only have two or three guests on each week. It would be nice to have somebody who could represent every type of music each week, but unfortunately it's not possible. Some weeks, Eddie Rabbit might come severely under the hammer because we've got a couple of guys on who are more interested in ska or rhythm and blues.
Well, yeah, sure, but I mean, like, at the British Rock and Pop Awards, there was not a single black face in the audience. Now, that was
okay,
incredible.
But I think the reason why we couldn't understand lyrics is not because they had heavy Jamaican accent. It's just simply because they were down in the track. And because it was double track, in other words, that he either double tracked his voice or a couple of them did it. I don't know because I wasn't there, but it wasn't because of accent or anything. I mean, you know, all the R&B in America, I can understand every word they say,
sure,
even when it's heavy accent.
But why do they want to do this? I don't know.
Maybe they don't like their own voices. I've done that before. I said, turn me down on the track because I don't like the way it sounds. I think the band sounds better, or somebody else is playing better. If the lead guitar is not as good, crank the bass up, because he's better.
As I was saying earlier, it's quite a lot of a feel, really. I mean, the voice need not necessarily be in tune. I sometimes find this with things that I've done myself. And, oh, that's a little bit out. But you know that it's the best you can do. And the
feel, yeah,
I often feel that way about your music.
Well, that's enough of mine. Let's talk about somebody else's music. Let's talk about Grace's music. You've got a new album out called Welcome to the Wrecking Ball. And looking at the inside cover, you look like the sort of person that anybody, especially Paul and myself, will be terrified to meet on a dark night in an alleyway. Menacing, evil, with a stick of dynamite in your hand. And yet, you're rather nice.
Well, that's one side of the personality in there. That occurs. She occurs occasionally out of nowhere. That's New York City machine gun rock and roll, that record, though.
When does that side of you occur? What actually brings out the nasty side of you?
It depends on who's playing the guitar behind me or for me. Because usually the guitar or the musicians will indicate a mood. And heavy metal guitar does that. Whereas if you play semi-classical piano, it puts you in another mood.
Do people you actually play with in groups put you in a mood as well? I mean, do you always get on well with people you play with? Or can they make you feel different when you get on stage thinking... You can go up feeling really uptight, thinking, I really don't want to sing tonight with this lot. I'd really rather be playing with so-and-so, who I really fit in well with.
Yes, but if they play something, that can change it, too. In other words, you can be in a stupid mood. And ordinarily, just being on a stage and making music will change your mood. It can also deaden pain. It's not only me. I've talked to a number of people. Pete Sears, one of the guys in the band, broke tendons, and he had cast on everything, and he said it was amazing because the pain went away when you went on stage. I don't know what that is, energy or the concentration or something. But yeah, a person can change your mood or put you in a good mood or make you cringe, or depending upon what and how they play it.
Grace, how did you feel years later when Spiro Agnew said that White Rabbit was a drug song? What a shocking revelation that was.
I'm surprised it took him that long to notice. Old Spiro apparently hadn't heard it before.
Took him about 5 years.
Gosh, I thought it was about Alice in Wonderland. I'm really disillusioned now.
It was, but do you remember that Alice in Wonderland in the book...
Ate mushrooms.
The caterpillar sitting on top of a mushroom smoking dope through a hookah saying, why don't you have some of this psychedelic mushroom? And she gets, in fact, high. What I was doing with that song is trying to tell... Parents were annoyed with us for taking dope, and I said, yeah, but you read me Alice in Wonderland. What were they talking about in there? I mean, she drank out of a little bottle, said, drink me, and all of a sudden all the doors open, and she meets strange people. Yeah, I know British writers where they got their opium from India and so forth, and they're strange people.
Oh, right. A lot of fairy stories and that, those sort of tales and poems.
Tinkerbell, magic dust, and all of a sudden you can fly. Yeah, those are all children's stories that they were reading to us and saying, why are you taking these drugs? It's because you kept reading me these drug stories when I was little, Mom.
Shatter my naive illusions.
Yeah, okay.
You'll be telling me tales about Rupert Bear next, and I won't believe you. Right, more of that later. It's 13 minutes to 7, round table with Grace Slick, Paul Gambaccini, and myself. This is a new single from Jane Kennaway. Her last one nearly made it. Everyone said it's going to be big, IOU. Anyway, the follow-up to IOU, produced by Steve Lillywhite, ace producer. And that's Celia. Did that appeal to you? It sounded a bit Grace Slickish in places. Grace?
I sort of liked it, and this may sound like a nasty thing to say, but you guys were talking through it, so I really didn't hear very much of it.
Well, I would like to point out, in our defense, because people say this, Mike Hawk's producer, well-known personality, who was on stage at a well-known London venue only last week, that's enough of that, is laughing and guffawing because we were talking about this today in the office. Well, in actual fact, we don't talk through many of the records. People write in and say, yes, I was no Kevin. Well, you two are talking all the way through that, but in fairness to Paul and myself, we were talking a little bit at the beginning about music, weren't we?
I wasn't saying anything.
Saying anything. True, yes, we were hardly talking at all.
I liked what I heard, though. It was a strange thing. Celia, something about she was a teacher, go back to Geneva. And I thought, geez, I'd love to know what the rest of that is. A strange subject matter, and I always like strange subject matter. And I liked it, what I heard.
Did you think she sounded a little like you in places?
Or
do you not think about that?
Maybe a little bit, but it was a double voice situation, which I ordinarily don't do, so it, no.
There is a singer, and he has put a couple of singles out, called Kirsty McColl, and I've heard some of her stuff that hasn't been released yet, and a couple of tracks that I heard a few weeks ago, I turned around and said, wow, that sounds just like Grace Slick. Very, very similar.
I heard a woman that sounds like a cross between me and Mickey Thomas, which is very difficult to do, because he's an R&B singer, and he doesn't really... But she's in a group called Toronto, and I only heard one record. I've never heard anybody that really I thought sounded that way. Other people do. Other people say, well, she sounds like Streisand, or she sounds like... But I'm quite sure Barbara Streisand probably has never heard anybody. I think your own objectivity is probably pretty slim. Where are we going with this? What do you think of the record?
Listen, would you have to put your bag down for you somewhere? You look a bit uncomfortable. I'm worried about it because it's been on your lap for the whole time. It looks very heavy. I'm a little worried about you.
Get rid of that.
Is that better?
Yes.
Great.
Thank you. Now okay. I can
You can relax. You're with friends. It's all right. Paul Gambaccini, the one that wasn't talking during that record.
Thank you, Mike. Now I speak. Steve Lillywhite is king, of course, and he's one of several kings in the production field, but he is one of definitely
I wondered
a
who
king.
Was king.
and he... has produced a very nice effect in that record. It sounds as if she is standing in a room which has a very, very high ceiling and walls which are very, very far away. And there's some mystical thing going on there which suggests that Celia is a very special person. And Jane Kennaway's voice seems to go with it. I think that's the merger of effects there is the best thing about the record. I'm not so crazy about the song, but I myself, who have heard this record before, still haven't really gotten what is going on there with Celia.
The part of Paul Gambaccini was played by.
Yes. Well,
nobody can tell me what that was. Nobody knows who Celia is and why she ought to go back to Switzerland.
I kept thinking of Celia of the Seals, which was
Donovan. Yes. It's funny. I thought exactly the same thing.
No, she's not barking like a seal would do. So I don't really know. But I think this is an improvement over IOU. I do think that because I think that it's more musical and.
Is IOU another Jane Kennaway record?
That was her last single.
And who was that produced by? The last single, was that Steve Lillywhite as well?
No, that was originally on a small label called the Growing Up in Hollywood label, which was later.
She affected the vocal stylings of Lena Lovitch. Have you ever heard of her?
Yeah, vaguely.
IOU. Right, I think we'll press on while we discuss matters.
I want to ask Grace one thing, if I can ask.
I don't think we'll press on at all. I think we're going to carry on with Paul Gambaccini talking for a while.
I've asked her several things, but I'll ask her one more thing here, which actually is not related to any of her records ever. But, Grace, you do realize that this is Walter Cronkite's last day. Walter Cronkite has read the news on American television for 19 years. It's like Kenneth Kendall reading it on TV every night for 19 years, except for holidays and when he was ill. What is your life going to be like without him?
I don't know. I don't care, but Paul Kantner does. We just did a song on a Modern Times album. I'll give that a little plug, which is the new Starship record, which I'm also on because I'm doing with them as well as doing solo album. But he says, what you going to do about, and everything stops, and he says, Walter Cronkite. So it is affecting Paul Kantner to some degree. Possibly he doesn't care at all, and that's why he put it on there. And that's probably what it is. Who cares?
Have you Cronkites finished?
We have.
Today and future, next year will be National Cronkite Day, and we'll all take a national holiday.
Thanks, I got a chance to plug the album, though. Thanks for bringing it up.
Good. Do you want to mention it again, briefly?
Okay, there's an album called Modern Times coming out by Jefferson Starship, which I hope all of you march down to buy. Please do that.
Good. Okay, on we go. Praying Mantis and an old whore, because it's an oldie redone. There have been a lot of them. Do you think that adds anything to the original?
Well, in the sense that it is a heavier, more metallic sound of the old Kinks record. It doesn't touch the Kinks record, though, but it's an okay record. I was thinking about Grace's reaction, because the minute the record started, she said, this is another remake, isn't it? And I thought, yes. And then I thought, I wonder what it was in the drinking water in the mid-60s and late 60s and early 70s, because better songs were written. Why? And it is true. Lately, people in this country especially have been concentrating on making records instead of writing songs. We've had sounds, we've had fashions. I mean, Spandau Ballet, who incidentally I cannot stand, and I thought I'd mention that because I'm the first person on Radio 1 to say that. This network has been sycophantic about that group. I would say that...
Network? How can you generalize like that?
Well...
Bigoted, narrow-minded person.
I'm not narrow-minded at all.
No, I thought I'd say that. Then.
I know you did. I know you did. No,
I mean not the whole network. Let's be honest. I mean, the whole network hasn't been brainwashed by them. Let's be honest.
All right, perhaps not the whole network, but several DJs have been enthusing about a group. And here we go again. It's this growing up in public syndrome. Groups in Britain getting exposed on their first or second records, and because they get airplay, because they get the press, if they are trendsetters, they're almost used up and worn out by the time their fourth or fifth record comes along. Well, in reality, for someone like Eddie Rabbit, say, a total contrast, Eddie Rabbit is just getting it all together by the time his fourth or fifth record comes along. So by the time he's on his 10th, 11th, 12th record, he actually is quite an artist, has got all down about songs and records. Whereas these groups here, I mean, we've been through punk, we've been through new wave, we've been through ska, we're going through futurist now. I mean, we whipped through mod. Whatever happened to Ian Page? Hi, Ian. You know, well, where's Jimmy Percy now?
But you're just talking about the last few years. I mean, that sort of
that's
thing...
Right. Well, that is what I'm talking about. I am talking about the last few years.
But that sort of thing's happened over many years. I mean, it's sort of 50s, 60s, 70s. It's happened in some way. We're just more aware of that because it's current.
No. I mean, the artists from the previous eras have been longer lasting.
I don't think so. An equivalent era to this was maybe the Merseybeat beat era of the sort of early mid-60s. And then the mid-60s, and there was just as fast a turnover then in terms of groups suddenly mushrooming and having two or three hits and dying again.
Yes, but what I mean is that we had more lasting artists out of that. I mean, I actually do think that.
Well, how do you know you're not going to get more lasting artists out of this?
Well, because already Generation X have broken up, already Sham 69 have broken up, already the Sex Pistols have broken up. I mean, I can't believe it. It happened so quickly.
But out of the punk thing have come Police, Blondie, Elvis Costello.
Yes, but what I'm my original point being about Spandau Ballet, God, this is even the original point, that was point number two, is that groups are concentrating on sounds rather than songs, records rather than songs, the consequence being that when the sound is no longer novel, the group is dispensable. And that's why nowadays a lot of these artists are washed up and thrown away before they even get a chance to develop into lasting artists. And that's why these old songs keep returning, because people need songs if all they have is a sound. Now, okay, all right, this is perhaps unfair to the chaps in Spandau Ballet, and I don't mean to slate them because I just picked them out. I mean, they're dedicated to their sound and everything.
Right. Thank you, Paul. Could you decipher any of that? Did you agree with it, Grace?
That was a lot of stuff.
Use it up and wear it out was the theme.
Yeah, I don't know. They're also, you're thinking about a time when there were only a few groups doing anything at all. There were only a few groups, for that matter. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of groups now. And the percentages are of thousands and thousands of cars, how many of them are going to be beautiful? Thousands and thousands of groups, how many of them are going to be real good lyricists or real good anything? They're probably remaking stuff, because how many songs can you write? You've got to have a record out every year or every 6 months. You've got to have a set. You got to have a certain amount of songs. So they're probably all these new groups just have to have songs. They're doing old stuff because they just can't write anything that fast, that good.
Yeah, we do have to be fair in one other point, which is that only because of the 60s and early 70s artists do we feel that people, performers, have to write their own material. Actually, there's no real long-term historical precedent for that.
They can do whatever they want to do. I would think that for longevity, you do write your own stuff, because then you're identified as an individual rather than copy band.
In terms of actually writing material, you do a lot of your own stuff. And as well as mentioning your own album, there's a Jefferson Starship album on the way.
Right? Yeah.
Which is due out when, roughly-ish?
I think the end of March or beginning of April.
Are there any plans to come over here? There are probably plans to go to Europe somewhere.
I hope so. We're doing the States in May and hopefully here middle of summer or fall, I should think. Not too sure, but I hope so.
Be happy to take in Great Britain as well.
Oh, if we come over here, yeah, definitely.
Because I remember a terrible story when I was out at Luxembourg. I remember you doing a gig, I think it was somewhere in Germany, and the fans went berserk and raised the stadium to the ground and smashed all the equipment. I remember that because I was out there and it was in the papers.
You mean Lorelei?
It was in Germany.
Yeah, well, Lorelei, they burned everything up to the ground.
That's right, smashed all the equipment. Yeah. The crowd just attacked the stadium.
The rock and roll.
Raised it all to the ground.
That's true. Germans are hard for me to figure out. They did apparently the same thing to Bill Haley because they liked him, so they wrecked everything. I don't quite get it. They do make good machinery, though. Now with that, okay.
We must say, praying mantis. Okay, job. Right?
That's the end of the whole program. Yeah. We just thought we'd say that Germans do make good machinery, apart from anything else they might be doing.
Right, praying mantis all day, all of the night.
An American production. That sounds like the production is American. It sounds like Dolly Parton goes to Jamaica, or there's a Jamaican rhythm in there with a country western sound. They could probably do AM radio in the States.
Right.
They'd ship those little kids right over there.
People can laugh at the Nolans, but one of these weeks they're going to have the number one record in the universe.
Tuning feel of that, the instrumental on there. I think I sort of agree with you. The vocal didn't stand out that much for me, but I love that way that I'm rolling my hands, folks, for lack of words. But there's a churning feel on the instrumental part of that I like a lot.
Okay. Listen, what?
That is a... I was mentioning that before. Whether or not you like it is not what I mean, but that's a perfect American AM single. And sometimes I hear those, like the first time they come on the radio, I think, oh, my God, they're going to rake in the bucks with that. You Light Up My Life, whether or not you like it or not. The first time I heard it, I went, oh, my God, are they going to make money with that? You know, because you can just sort of hear what the American public is going to buy. I wish I knew how to write it. I'm not saying sing it. Just write it. All I'd like to do is be able to write it.
But haven't you got to be able to sing it as well to demo a song in some way? Because you can write a song, and if you can't put over on a demo...